Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
Coming up on Stu Does America, James Poulos joins to explain how cryptocurrency could help in the battle against woke cancel culture. A new pill shows promise for curbing COVID-19 related deaths. We'll get into that. And if you haven't noticed, the media is still playing their instruments as lefties on the Hill waltz and spin. We might as well join the fun as we do the Dance of the Dems.
Stu Does America.
Everyone in Washington is dancing, everyone's spinning, everyone's making their case. You know, we've grown, I guess, used to the idea that Democrats and politicians in general can bend the rules of logic. But did you know they can also bend the rules of space and time? It's true. Did you know today is actually yesterday? Did you know today, October 1st, is actually September 30th? Did you know that? It's true. Kind of. This is real, by the way. Only in Congress, which is governed by arcane rules and traditions that often operate like a parallel reality, is it possible to extend a day for more than 24 hours. In this case, by keeping the House in recess on Thursday night instead of adjourning as it does at the end of most days, leaders were able to keep the chamber in the September 30th legislative day, regardless of the actual passage of time. They've actually stopped the passage of time, or at least that's what they're telling you they've done. Democrats, who demanded a vote on an infrastructure bill this week, they would see action by September 30th. By refusing to allow October 1st to roll around, Ms. Pelosi was upholding her commitment in the very most technical of ways and offering the moderates a fig leaf to cover for the failure to secure the vote they had been promised. This is your freaking government. Instead of just admitting they didn't get the vote done on time, sorry about that, let's act like real partners in reality, they just suspended the day on September 30th and never adjourned it. So it's still yesterday. This is how dumb the system is. This is how ridiculous it is. They're saying it's a day, it's not. We always say, like, oh gosh, I can't believe they're just, it's like they're saying up is down and black is white, and yesterday is today. This is how this works. Now, if you really want to kind of get a vision as to what the process is looking like right now, as Nancy Pelosi tries to get the AOCs of the world and the Joe Manchins on the world to come to some sort of agreement so they can spend enough of your money to make their time worth it. This is basically what the behind the scenes looks like. This is a clip from the congressional baseball game the other day with Nancy Pelosi on the phone.
It was Rodney Davis at the top of the lineup.
Speaker, no doubt happy about that play, but she is known as a big sports fan.
Oh, and often,
after dealing with a lot of really difficult reporter questions related to what's going on,
this is, she's just at the game, not watching it, and just screaming at somebody. And look, I don't envy Nancy Pelosi for a million different reasons. The only thing I envy about Nancy Pelosi is her ice cream situation, which is pretty solid. As you may know from back in the day on this program, when Nancy Pelosi showed off her dual or tri freezers with ice cream filled with Jenny's ice cream, I went out and bought every flavor of Jenny's ice cream. And here's one thing you could say about Jenny's ice cream. It's not a Democratic thing. It's just good. Most of it. Some of the flavors are a little weird, but generally speaking, really good ice cream. Okay, so in this vein of just bending the laws of reality, here's Bernie Sanders tweeting about the current situation. He's very upset about what's going on and wants to explain to you the obvious truth. You should be able to get on board with this one, right? Two senators cannot be allowed to defeat what 48 senators and 210 House members want. We must stand with the working families of our country. We must combat climate change. We must delay the passing of the infrastructure bill until we pass a strong reconciliation bill. What, of course, Bernie doesn't bother pointing out there is it's not two senators defeating 48. It's 52 senators defeating 48. He's just deleting the entire Republican Party, which is not exactly out of character for Bernie. By the way, it would also be over 200 House members who also disagree with what Bernie is trying to do. What's interesting about this is not just the fact that Bernie is completely making up reality and ignoring 50 senators because they don't count. In addition to that, it's also an interesting insight into where these parties stand currently. The progressives, the AOCs, the Bernies right now want to try to hold the Democrats hostage and the president's agenda hostage so that they can get to $3.5 trillion. Joe Manchin has already said he'll do 1.5. So that's the difference, right? You get $2 trillion in between. If you think the Democratic Party actually cares about a $2 trillion difference in spending, you're nuts. They don't care at all. $2 trillion, they throw that out the window on the way to work. They burn it in fires every day inside their stupid offices. This is the reality of the Democratic Party. Now, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, whatever her stupid name is, I shouldn't say that. I mean, she's doing a very good job. She's actually holding the line. I'm just frustrated. Frustrated at all of this. But Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin are holding the line here because they want to stay about $1.5 trillion. Now, coincidentally, they are either in Sinema's case, a purple state in which she will need to please some Republicans to keep her job, or they are in Joe Manchin's state of West Virginia that voted for Donald Trump by like 35 points. So there is a reason politically for them to do this. And they're motivated as well by, I guess, some legitimate strains of moderation in their background. But again, is $1.5 trillion a moderate plan? After you're spending $1 trillion, after we spent $7 trillion on COVID relief, is really $1.5 trillion extra moderate? Is it? Compared to what? The Soviet Union? What are we talking about here? I bet we could go back to the Soviet Union's budget and not find anything like this. So Joe Manchin is now fighting with the hardcore left and trying to justify his position. Now, remember, Schumer here is the guy who really looks bad. Schumer has been, telling everybody, well, we can't lock these guys down. These moderates just won't come along and we need to get a number out of them. He's had a number since July and he signed a piece of paper acknowledging he had the number in July. Well, Manchin's pissed off about this. So the Bernie Sanders dynamic of him coming out and tweeting these negative things, hold up these bills unless we get what we want. And the Manchin side of things, where he's saying, I'm going to just freaking release bills to the press, or this signed paper to the press, so we can show you that this bill has been something that's been on my mind for a while, and I'll spend $1.5 trillion on it, not really much more. Between those two things, you have two sides that are pretty far apart. Now, I've talked to you a few times about the book Peril that came out with Bob Woodward. In there, they talk about the $1.9 trillion they spent on COVID relief at the beginning of the Biden administration. And Joe Manchin pulled off a very similar dance. He wanted $300 in extended unemployment instead of $400. And there's a few other differences. And he held out and he puffed and he went, oh, I'm so mad. I want the things that I want. And then eventually, of course, he gave in. This is the Joe Manchin history. This is what we're used to. Will he go to $3.5 trillion? I don't think he will. He'll want to come out and say that he got a win. And the Democratic, the Democrats on the far left, will they get to 3.5? No, but they'll get it probably higher than 1.5 eventually and pass it and say they got a win. They move Joe Manchin off of $1.5 trillion. All of this is to say this is a bunch of theater and it might not happen today. It might not happen yesterday like it was scheduled, but it's going to happen eventually. Do they need to take a month to get this thing hammered out? It might happen that way. But they're going to spend your money. Your money is gone. Act as if it's gone. Understand that inflation is going to go through the roof. Act as if it's going through the roof. Understand that the supply chains are going to have lots of problems. Act that way. Buy the Christmas presents right now. Get ahead of this stuff because it's coming around the corner. Now, the left-wing activists decided to paddle boat out to Joe Manchin's houseboat because we live in a country where our politicians live on houseboats and you can just paddle boat out to them. I mean, look at this nonsense. He went back and forth. This is such this is ridiculous. I will say, though, Joe Biden as a ballet dancer, he looks pretty good. He looks much more flexible than I would have imagined. Joe Manchin countered by asking the activists, how do you think that we spend this? How much do we spend on non-discretionary, basically non-defense? After they said that he spends too much on defense, someone shouted from the water, not enough. Manchin started to say, let me give you one bit of information before being interrupted by an activist who shouted to Manchin, I've got one little bit of information for you. This is the global superpower. This is how it's working. Okay, just so you're aware, the Republicans are likely to take over the Senate. This is our one chance right now to pass the legislation, the protesters said. And that's really what's motivating all this, because it's funny. If you go back to the Obama administration, they roll in with 60 senators, right? 60 senators. They've got massive control of the House, a huge wave election for Democrats. And they have problems getting through even something like Obamacare, which they were pitching at under $1 trillion. They couldn't get it through. They had to lock it in after. Think about this. The American people defeated a Massachusetts Democrat so that Obamacare wouldn't go through. And there was something about that. I don't know what the dynamic was playing out. I don't think I recognized this at the time. At the time, maybe it wasn't obvious. But now looking at it, it seemed like they were nervous about what people would think if they were going too far. They didn't want to lose control of the Senate. They had 60, but they didn't want to lose control of the Senate, lose control of the House. And they had margins big enough to believe they might be able to hold on to that power. That didn't wind up being true, but that's what they believed at the time. Fast forward to 2020. The Democrats know they're losing the House and the Senate, at least one of them. They know it. Now, you never know what's going to happen in a year, but they are certain of it right now. So they're acting as if they are a party that knows they're going to be out of power very soon. We're going to lose anyway. Let's just take the hit and go for everything now. It's strange. You'd think you'd go for more when you had 60 senators, but no, the opposite is actually playing out. They have such small margins. They know they're going to lose them. So they're just going for whatever they can get right now. It's all a game. And it is basically a giant conversation of theatrical drama to create more problems. It's Friday. I'd like to at least think about a solution to some of these problems. And their solutions are out there. We'll get into that next. Let's say you just came into some money, let's say $3.5 trillion, and you wanted to buy a new home. Now, you're going to get a nice home for $3.5 trillion, but you want to make sure you're getting everything you want. And to get that process to go the way you want it to go, you need a real estate agent who you can trust. Do you want a $1 trillion swimming pool? I mean, it's going to be a big swimming pool, but hey, you got $3.5 trillion. Why not blow $1 trillion of it on a pool? I mean, it's going to be an infinity pool. It's going to be a sweet one. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the place to go to find the real estate agent that can walk you through that $3.5 trillion purchase. Or maybe a purchase that's a little more sensible. Maybe, a few $100,000. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Wherever you are in the country, you can find the best agent in your area. Just go there. Get more information. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the place to go. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. I'm happy to welcome James Poulos to the program. He's executive editor of The American Mind, author of the upcoming book Human Forever, The Digital Politics of Spiritual War, and has a recent guest essay in The New York Times entitled How Bitcoin Can Immunize America from Cancel Culture. I'll be sure to tweet out a link shortly. James, how's it going?
Hey, Stu, how are you?
Really well. I appreciate it. And I really liked your piece a lot. And I think you went to a place that I think a lot of people on the right have not gone, which is looking to something that can really solve this problem rather than sort of the political infighting we've been seeing over cancel culture for a while. We can all sort of complain and blame the other side for what they do, and it's all totally valid, and I do it all the time. However, Bitcoin and blockchain are solutions to this problem that go around the sort of structure we're all playing in right now. Can you kind of walk people through this?
Yeah. So, a common thought on Bitcoin is that it's basically just one more asset class. It's something you can invest in. It's something that you can sock away and you watch the number go up and you're happy at some point in the future. That's not entirely wrong when it comes to one flavor of Bitcoin, but there are others. And ultimately, what the blockchain offers, what Bitcoin offers, is a way for ordinary Americans to take some control, take some agency back, and you tell computers what to do. Tell all the power of a data center what to do. And what it can do is it gives us ordinary people a way of buying and selling, creating goods that are valuable, that are memorable, that can make us stronger, that can protect and expand our human capabilities, rather than hemming us into a social credit system, which is really what it looks like things are headed to. I mean, you look at the way that the Treasury, the SEC, other agencies in the federal government are really working hand in glove to fully monitor, invade your most intimate details of your life. And the promise of Bitcoin is that, you know, we can have our own data centers, we can create our own economic life, and one that's consonant with our culture, with our way of life more broadly. And that's something that no other type of technology is really offering in the same way right now that we can take advantage of.
Yeah, it really does tie into this problem. And that's, I don't think it's just currency and spending, although that's a big part of it. It goes to, I think, free expression and so many other things. But let's talk about the financial part here. You write in your piece, in recent months, we've seen payment processors, web hosts, and other corporations brazenly take coordinated action in lockstep with government priorities to financially freeze out disfavored businesses online. The elimination of a sitting president from social media, whatever its perceived merit or rationale, opened the door to a regime where those who can cancel and suspend accounts do so at whim and in unison. It is Donald Trump can get his message out. I mean, I don't think he has a problem doing that. But think about how this could hit the average person who doesn't have, you know, people aren't going to cover their press conferences. Bitcoin and blockchain give a kind of a way around that. They're able to, they can't shut this down. The government can't stop this. And that's what's so powerful about it.
Well, that's right. If they really wanted to crack down on it, there are some things that they could do, but it would really begin to push at the last vestiges of the social contract that, you know, most Americans consider themselves to have signed up for. So, you know, it's really important that we have a Second Amendment for compute, that Americans have, you know, a codified, recognized right to be able to do things like buy, you know, high processing computers, to do things like mine Bitcoin, to do things like, you know, transfer money at, you know, perhaps more than $600, which is the limit that Treasury wants to impose, before triggering a federal inspection of your bank accounts. If the feds aren't going to do this or can't do it right away, we got to do this at the state level. State legislators, governors need to step up, start laying down some markers legally. It can be done. There's an opening to do it, and the time to do it's right now.
I think it's a great point. And I think there's a fight going on with the idea of people who are going to embrace this technology. We've seen that, you know, Miami is doing this. El Salvador is doing it famously. And that embrace, as opposed to the opposite side, which is like China, right? China banned all cryptocurrency transactions in their country. No mining can occur there anymore. And I mean, it feels like the American reaction to something like that would to be going the other way. If China's doing it, they see it as a threat to authoritarian power. Why aren't we embracing the other side of that equation?
Well, I think there's a lot of false criticism of Bitcoin out there. You know, there's an attempt to describe cryptocurrencies as eco-unfriendly. And it's like, well, stack that up against, you know, what China does to the global environment. Stack that up to what the petrodollar has been responsible for in terms of emissions. And, you know, this kind of tit for tat argument doesn't get us anywhere, especially if you consider that, like, nuclear power, and even as, you know, El Salvador is trying to prove right now, volcanic power can be used to contribute to mining. There's another argument that, you know, Bitcoin's a criminal enterprise, basically, that is very dangerous as far as, you know, who can move around what and using this alternate form of currency. And the reality is, you know, if you want to hide your tracks, the absolute worst way to do that is by encoding every step of your transaction along the blockchain, this permanent ledger of all the series of transactions, where they came from and who made them. So these arguments are specious, but they get traction. You know, I think a lot of people are worried, especially at a higher level, that the dollar needs to be the world reserve currency in order for America to be in good shape. And, you know, I got to tell you, with Janet Yellen out there expecting a $7 trillion tax shortfall because people are already losing confidence in the power of the dollar, with runaway inflation, the Federal Reserve repo window has been sucking up dollars. I mean, there's a lot of slack in the system. The value of the dollar is plummeting. And we've got, you know, $1 trillion infrastructure bill, 3.5 perhaps plus $1 trillion bill on, you know, quote unquote climate, quote unquote social policy. The government's federal government's policy right now is to flood the zone with dollars and debase the currency. And that leaves, you know, ordinary people wondering how it is that they make, you know, pennies in their savings account. And even that pittance is taxable income. And now you got Janet Yellen, who shouldn't even be in Treasury this quickly after rotating out of the Fed, saying that she wants to tax unrealized gains. I mean, this is insanity. The people in charge are completely destroying the full faith and credit of the American people in the dollar. So these arguments about Bitcoin, that it's irresponsible or reckless or, you know, not good for you in some way, they're ridiculous. And we see every day why they're so weak. And that's why people are gravitating, you know, to platforms that allow you to buy and trade crypto, and ultimately platforms like the one that I'll be using, Canonic, to publish my own book, On the Chain, For Sale in Bitcoin.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Okay, wait, that's interesting. So how does that work? And can you kind of explain the technology behind it?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, it's a website, canonic.xyz, created by a founder friend of mine who's, you know, a genius, if I do say so myself. And basically, you know, you can just upload your work, your book, to the site where it is encrypted onto chain. It works a lot like Amazon for buying and selling books, except, you know, you don't have to become a serf in Jeff Bezos's empire. I think this is just the beginning. People are obviously discovering, you know, what NFTs can do, and there can be a lot of hype and, you know, a lot of hot air around some of these cryptocurrencies. But at the end of the day, it's about, you know, people taking the opportunity amongst themselves to create things of value, to create things that are memorable that we can share through generations, and take charge of our destiny back from people who want to trap us in this kind of cyborg vivarium where, you know, we're accustomed to having this little footprint. We don't travel without being taxed. We know that everything we say and do is being monitored, and we just try to, you know, keep the authorities from hassling us.
I think what's a great concept behind what your friend's website, and I think this is a great promise of blockchain generally, is that your book will go up there and it will never be able to be removed. It will never be able to be edited. And on the same thing, if you make some claim in there that winds up being not true or some argument you're embarrassed about later, you'll never be able to delete it. It's just there forever. And I think there in that world holds a lot of promise. We talk about, you know, social media, and I think a lot of times we get wrapped up as conservatives, as people who look at this and say, well, you know, we need to pass this law, we need to reform this law, and there's, you know, some interesting possibilities there, and maybe some things that should be done. We also think, well, we should make the tech companies do X, Y, and Z, but we're never going to be comfortable with the decisions made by a Washington regulator or a tech company CEO. We are never going to like them, and this is a way for us to kind of go completely around that system and make it so that our, you know, free speech stays as free as it should be.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, let's face it, a lot of these big tech companies, as much as they've offered us, you know, shiny new objects to enjoy or whatever, a lot of them are just hand in glove with the federal government. You know, they were supported by the military industrial complex, the intelligence community early on in their creation. And, you know, we shouldn't find ourselves in the position that we do as Americans, where so much of our technological innovation, so much of our sense of the possibilities of tomorrow is just kind of runoff from things that, people hiding in some big building under maximum security conditions in Maryland or something, investigated and developed with basic research using blank checks decades and decades ago. I mean, we got to return to a time when ordinary Americans can actually do the innovating themselves, where they can invest together and work together on technology that empowers them and strengthens them and protects their way of life and gives them the opportunity to have surprises in life, that life isn't something that's scripted and mapped out and gamed in advance. We're not just imitating, you know, the swarms of digital entities or programs that fly this way or that, and we're scrambling to keep up. The way for us to take control of our machines back and to liberate ourselves from a social credit system run by, you know, organizations and entities that have blurred the line between public and private away is for us to rally around resources like Bitcoin, you know, at the state and the local level. We've got people who understand the stakes and who are capable of laying the groundwork, setting the table for, you know, really a sort of refounding of our social compact and our legal system on a footing that's going to allow our country, the United States of America, to persist and survive and thrive in a digital age.
James, let's talk a little bit about the social credit system you mentioned, because I think to a lot of people, I know when I first heard it, you know, it's a Black Mirror episode. It's something the Chinese government is going to do to crack down on their people. But as people kind of become aware of ESG scores and all of these things that are filtering into our society, they're seeing people who are disfavored, getting banned and blocked. How does a social credit score system manifest itself in the U.S. when we do have some protections, in theory at least, against it?
Well, I think you're already seeing it with the sudden triumph of woke ideology over so many of our major institutions, you know, academia, finance, education, you know, corporate life, healthcare. I mean, you run the gamut, and they're all lining up to do this. And why? And it's because, you know, the package that is being offered to the ordinary American now is, well, you might not be able to save money, you might not be able to make money, and you might not be able to, you know, find any community or any prospect of advancement of your life. You might not be able to afford forming a family. You know, you have to content yourself with maybe a pet that fits in your micro apartment. Your standard of living is going down, costs are going up. But guess what? There's good news, which is the way that you can get ahead in this society is to say the right things and to do the things that you're told. Mm. And every time you do that on the internet, in this, you know, in this sort of imitation of reality called social media, social credit, you'll get points. You'll get points that are doled out by the company, the corporation that controls your economic life, by the federal government, and by the voluntary, you know, enforcers who say they want to defund the police, but they want to become your thought police and the police of your words. And if you do good, you get badges. If you do bad, you get punished. You get pushed down the rankings. You get shadow banned. You get banned outright. You know, maybe your account gets zeroed out. Maybe your credit score is reduced. It's obvious that this is, you know, the whole talk of the Great Reset, a core part of it is conditioning people to give up on the idea that they can really have an economic life, an independent economic life, one that supports their, you know, their continuance of their family, their growth of their family, and their personal development. And to replace all that kind of, you know, using money as a measure of goods and services and value in exchange, and replacing that with basically a point system. I mean, that's what we see right now with wokeness, and we see a complete lack of any hesitancy to just zap people out of existence on the internet, basically, if they you know, cross a line, which is always shifting and is always being set by in many cases people who look at ordinary Americans and they say, we hate you, and we can't wait for the day when people like you are no longer in this country anymore, just don't exist.
Mm, yeah, I mean, you really see a micro cosmos of this that's happened. We've all understood it happens to, let's say, a conservative student at a left-wing university. Who knows? They might still be conservative. They might think those thoughts, but they know never to say them because they're essentially their social credit score would go down with the professor and the kids around them. So they just don't say anything. And it almost like it creates an implied censorship, even if there's not direct censorship. And I wonder if this will be used to expand into all these other rights as well. I mean, there's no, you don't have to worry about overturning the Second Amendment if every gun company can't do financial transactions. This is why we need things like Bitcoin to go around it. Do you think it will expand to all these other areas?
Well, it's expanding right now. And, you know, look, this isn't ideological in the way that it used to be. I mean, our concepts of left and right really go back to around the French Revolution, just sort of like who sat where in Parliament. Yeah. And, you know, if you're trying to participate in the most fundamental public discussions that a citizen would want to have about the basic political arrangements of their regime, which is supposed to be our constitutionally guaranteed form of government, you're talking about things like what level of immigration is good. Are men men, or are men sometimes magically women? You know, is natural immunity good? Are antibodies things that it's good for a person to have? You know, are we better off having treatments for the coronavirus rather than vaccines that don't really work the way vaccines work, and that's why you have to keep shooting them? Basic conversations about the fundamentals of public health, of public safety, of, you know, what makes a just government. And if you can't talk about those things, or if, you know, if your opinions are deemed toxic because you insist that whiteness is not some kind of spectral monstrosity that infects people and spreads injustice wherever it goes, you know, this is not about conservative versus liberal everywhere. We've gone to a much more fundamental level. And it just so happens that, you know, conservatives most of the time today are a little bit more inclined to recognize, sort of see the warning signs and have a sense of where this is going. But this is going to spread unless it stops. And the best way for ordinary people to stop it is by making sure that in this digital age we live in, they assert and establish firm social and cultural and personal control over their technological destinies.
I love it. James Poulos, executive editor of The American Mind, author of a great New York Times guest essay, How Bitcoin Can Immunize America from Cancel Culture. Really important stuff here. Be sure to give it a read. We'll make sure to tweet it out as well. James, thanks so much for taking the time and coming on the program.
Hey, anytime. Thank you.
We're just talking about how cryptocurrency and blockchain offers some ways to kind of get around these big tech companies. However, until all that stuff's kind of fully put together, you're probably still on a lot of these. You might be watching on Facebook right now. If you're on Facebook and you want to go around the big tech companies, because they might be blocking some of the content we're putting up there. It happens a lot, especially with conservative pages. If you go to Facebook and you go ahead and click the follow button, or you hold it down if you're on your phone, there's a little top secret menu that pops up and lets you mark the show or my page, Stubergear, as one of your favorite pages. And of course, obviously, I'm one of your top 3 million favorite people. So, I mean, it's clear. But if you do that, you'll be able to see a lot of more of the comment content, and you can drop some comments on our clips, and we'll get to all the comments on air as we go on. So let's go into some other news here. Disney is not, I wouldn't consider them a group of good decision makers. Okay, let me give you a couple of examples of this. So they fired Gina Carano. Because she basically made a normal political observation and one that was made by other stars on the show, but on the left side, she kind of made it, not even clearly, but sort of to the right side, and she was thrown off of The Mandalorian. I mean, really the breakout character of that show for Disney Plus. And so she was tossed. Then I guess people got pissed off about that, and they decided to start a campaign to get Lucy Lawless to take the role. And Lucy Lawless then did not get the role or anything else adjacent to Star Wars. And they think, at least she believes, the reason she didn't get it is because, well, people were so excited about it, then Disney didn't want to bend to the mob. So they bent to the mob to fire Gina Carano, but then didn't want to bend to the mob to allow a replacement that they themselves wanted to hire. Makes no sense. Then think about Hollywood for a second. Because now Disney Plus, after screwing up The Mandalorian, what are they going to do with their time? Sister Act 3. Seriously, Sister Act 3 with Whoopi Goldberg. And now look. Whoopi Goldberg, she can barely get through an episode of The View. She's going to be dancing or bouncing around all over the place. I mean, I think that's a terrible idea. Look, it's one good thing. Nuns wear lots of clothing. So at least we should be safe on that front. Though you never know with Disney. They could try something crazy there, too. And if you want to talk about real solid cinema, we're talking about what does America need right now? What if you could do anything to change the tides of the negative forces in America, what would you do? Would there be one thing? And of course, the answer to that is yes, it's to re-release Rocky IV, but this time with a director's cut. To say I'm excited about this, I mean, it's not even remotely close to accurate. I'm beyond excited for it. Rocky IV, directed by Sylvester Stallone, or at least this is the new director's cut. It's going to add 40 minutes of footage. Now, if you go back and watch Rocky IV, as I have several hundred times, I was a big fan, okay? You know, I was a kid when this movie came out. It was, I don't know, 9? When did it come out? 85? I think it was 9? Yeah, 1985. Now, this is, of course, as you probably do know, the movie that ended the Cold War and defeated communism all around the world. I mean, people know that part of it already. But you watch it back, and you could tell it's from the 80s. Let's put it that way. Not just because, you know, the film, you know, the footage isn't as good and everything. It's like basically a montage of music videos more than it's a movie. Like, it's just a bunch of full-length songs just dropped right in the middle of the movie. Songs you've never heard before unless you've watched Rocky IV. Burning Heart, kind of a hit song back in the day. That's in there. But then there's also just like, you know, No Easy Way Out by Robert Tepper, which is approximately, he's just driving a car and flashing back to boxing scenes for like 8 minutes. I don't know. I mean, I love every second of it, but like it's a little bit of an artifact of the time, that Rocky IV. It'll be interesting to see what they do with it in a re-release. They're releasing it on November 11th in theaters for one night. It's called Rocky versus Drago, the ultimate director's cut. And then it'll be able to rent on demand on November 12th. I don't know. 40 extra minutes of footage. I am in. The world sucks right now. Okay. Everything's bad. You know what's good? Rocky IV. Rocky IV will bring us back to the America we all demand and deserve. So I assume maybe global communism will be defeated once again. Not holding out my full hopes for that, but I at least hope the movie's good. Back in a second. Merck, the pharmaceutical company, is announcing that they have a new pill. This is a new sort of medication, at least, that reduces the risk of hospitalization or death from COVID-19 by around 50% in a clinical trial. Now, of course, this is early information coming from the company who makes it, so you always have to take that with a grain of salt. But it is maybe another promising treatment around the corner. I will say this, and this is, I don't know, is this controversial? People are a tad too sensitive about coronavirus. Ta-da. I know it's a weird kind of take, but it really is insane. These things come, like, all right, Merck's coming out with a new medication. I've seen both sides of this. People are acting as if, you know, oh, this is terrible. It's going to distract people from taking the vaccines. And then they're going to think there's these treatments and they don't need the vaccines. And the other side, it's like, why are they coming out with a new drug when they already have ivermectin? It's like, look, I know a lot of people. I've talked to a lot of people about this. People talk to me all the time about COVID. Why? Because I rant about it on the program all the time. And, you know, I'm on a couple of news shows, so it's what people talk about. And I've met tons of people who have taken ivermectin. I've met tons of people who have taken hydroxychloroquine. I've met tons of people who have taken the vaccine. You know, just do what you want to do. Like, I don't really buy this thing on the right where you can't get ivermectin because they won't prescribe it. It does happen. Some doctors won't do it. But there's plenty of doctors who will. And honestly, if you feel so passionately that you're going to choose the medication that you believe is the right one and you believe it's ivermectin, good for you. You're going to have to find a doctor who agrees with your form of treatment. If you're going to a doctor who thinks ivermectin is horse paste, then you need a new doctor, right? Like, the doctor is not giving you the care that you need. You probably need to go find somebody else. On the other hand, if you think, you know, you want to get vaccine, you know, you want to have 14 vaccines in every arm every Tuesday, you want 9 booster shots a day. I don't know. I mean, okay. But like this idea that we all need to freak out, like, if you don't want to take the damn Merck drug, don't take it. Ivermectin's another Merck drug. Take that one. If you don't want to take ivermectin, you want to take this one, do it. Stop telling me about it. Everyone freaks out about everything. And I just think there needs to be a little bit. This is why I solved this pandemic a couple weeks ago. And if you missed that show, you should go back and watch it. But like, the problem here and the problem with all this COVID stuff is that not everybody has it in their own control. Right. Like, you know, I don't know, blowing up your liver and your kidneys with alcohol is a problem that you face if you drink too much alcohol. But we have a solution to that, which is don't drink alcohol if you don't want that to happen to you. Right? You can control, generally speaking, that problem. When it comes to something like drunk driving, it's another story. And that's why it's hard to deal with drunk driving. It's not hard to deal with you know, kidney problems from drinking, because people do it themselves. And we might tell you, hey, please don't do that. Please try something else. Have a glass of water every once in a while. I know that's not water. That's actually vodka. We can have those conversations. But like, when there's a possibility of high, you have N95 masks that are widely available. If you happen to be one of these people who's triple vaxxed and is still freaking out when you go to the grocery store, wear one of those. Don't make all of us mask up. You go and take control of the situation yourself. Same thing here. If this Merck thing comes out and it works as well, it gets approved. Fantastic. Treatments are part of this. And I will say there are a lot of things we can't prevent ourselves from getting. A lot of illnesses hit people all the time, and we have treatments to deal with that. Vaccines are part of the equation, but not the only part. If we have good treatments like monoclonal antibodies, for example, which, act in some ways in a similar way as the mRNA vaccine. I mean, it kind of cuts the corner on the mRNA vaccine, but they work in similar ways. Whatever. Good. We want people to live. Can we agree at least on that point? I mean, I just, this stuff doesn't need to be, a news story comes out and everybody picks their side. Let's just all cheer for the good things to happen. I don't get it. I really don't. And we don't need things like what Gavin Newsom's doing in California, where now he's going to try to mandate vaccines for K through 12. Now, of course, you might note they're not even approved for kids K through 12. They're only approved for kids 12 and over. So I guess he's assuming eventually they're going to get approved, which is probably going to happen for 5 to 11 year olds here in the next couple months. But he wants to mandate vaccines. And look, never, at least I can think of in my life, have I ever seen such a reversal of the parent-child relationship. If you're a parent, you sacrifice things to try to help your child, to protect your child. That's your role as a dad or a mom, right? That's what you do. You change your life to make sure their life is better. You change the things you do to try to protect them and give them the best life possible. And all the sacrifice is on you. Kids can just, they don't have to go to work to make sure they're fed every day. You sacrifice, you do those things to make sure they are taken care of. And this COVID situation, the way the left has calculated it, is to completely reverse that idea. That kids have to do all of the sacrifice with none of the risk. Remember, the kids aren't the ones dying here. The kids have to sacrifice to protect the adults and the grandparents. Like, that is a total reversal of how we think of the nuclear family. And you wonder at times how much that plays into it, because we've seen several organizations outwardly admitting they want to dissolve that tradition. But like, I just people are never going to get on board with this. You'll get some people on the far left to say that this is a sensible thing to do, to make kids sacrifice their entire childhoods to protect the outlying possibility of negative effects on a vaccinated 65-year-old. Sure, somebody out there will agree with that, but it's totally against our nature, and that really does need to stop. Probably the most important takeaway from this week is that Nancy Pelosi sucks. That's why we have a Nancy Pelosi Sucks pen. Yes, NancyPelosiSucksPen.com. It's a replica of the pen she used to sign the Donald Trump impeachment. And it says Nancy Pelosi sucks in her signature font. I hope you enjoy it. By the way, we know all these big problems are coming up with the supply chains right now. These are in stock. If you want to get them for Christmas, this might be a good time to just order them, get it out of the way. NancyPelosiSucksPen.com. By the way, she made the weirdest hand gesture I've ever seen the other day. We pointed this out. How long are her fingers? I really don't understand. She's making two concentric circles there. How is she doing that? She looks like an alien with like those really long. She's weird. This comes in on YouTube, where you can always comment on the show as it happens. Nancy Pelosi was throwing up the new white power sign since the cat's out of the bag on the OK sign. Got to have the new one. I think that's probably it. OK, before we leave, here's what happened. Guy in Florida gets in his little plane. He's going to fly over the Florida-Georgia line, and then he flies into the Georgia lines, like the power lines, crashed his plane into the power lines. Now, that sucks. And then he got tangled around, and then he's just dangling there for hours and hours as rescue crews tried to come and save him. I will say, the negative side of this, the pessimistic side, is the guy crashed his plane, which sucks. The optimistic side, glass half full, is there a better place to crash your plane than power lines? I mean, it's the best, unless there's someone just left out a giant marshmallow you could crash into.